Welcome to this Ubula audio production of Scanners Live in Vain by Cordwainer Smith. Part 3. 5. Within the downport, Martell had less trouble than he thought. He draped his air coat over his shoulder so that it concealed the instruments. He took up his scanning mirror and made up his face from the inside by adding tone and animation to his blood and nerves until the muscles of his face glowed and the skin gave out a healthy sweat. That way he looked like an ordinary man who had just completed a long night flight. After straightening out his clothing and hiding his tablet within his jacket, he faced the problem of what to do about the talking finger. If he kept the nail, it would show him to be a scanner. He would be respected. But he would be identified. He might be stopped by guards, whom the instrumentality had undoubtedly set around the person of Adam Stone. If he broke the nail, but he couldn't. No scanner in the history of the confraternity had ever willingly broken his nail. That would be resignation. And there was no such thing. The only way out was in the up and out. Martell put his finger to his mouth and bit off the nail. He looked at the now queer finger and sighed to himself. He stepped toward the city gate, slipping his hand into his jacket and running up his muscular strength to 4 times normal. He started to scan and then realized that his instruments were masked. Might as well take all the chances at once, he thought. The watcher stopped him with a searching wire. The sphere thumped suddenly against Martell's chest.
"Are you a man?" said the unseen voice.
Martell knew that as a scanner in Haberman condition, his own field charge would have illuminated the sphere.
"I am a man."
Martell knew that the timbre of his voice had been good. He hoped that it would not be taken for that of a Mönchenjäger or a beast or an unforgiven one, who with mimicry sought to enter the cities and ports of mankind.
"Name, number, rank, purpose, function, time departed."
Martell. He had to remember his old number, not Scanner 34. "Sunward, 4234, 182nd year of space. Rank, rising subchief." That was no lie, but his substantive rank. "Purpose, personnel, and lawful within the limits of this city. No function of the instrumentality. Departed chief outport, 2019 hours. Everything now depended on whether he was believed or would be checked against chief outport. The voice was flat and routine.
"Time desired within the city."
Martell used the standard phrase.
"Your honorable sufferance is requested."
He stood in the cool night air waiting. Far above him, through a gap in the mist, he could see the poisonous glittering in the sky of scanners. "The stars are my enemies," he thought. "I have mastered the stars, but they hate me." Oh, that sounds ancient, he thought, like a book. Too much cranching. The voice returned.
"Sunward. 4234-182, rising subchief Martell, enter the lawful gates of the city. Welcome. Do you desire food, raiment, money, or companionship?"
The voice had no hospitality in it, just business. This was certainly different from entering a city in a scanner's role. Then the petty officers came out and threw their belt lights on their fretful faces and mouthed their words with preposterous deference, shouting against the stone deafness of a scanner's ears. So that was the way that a subchief was treated. Matter of fact. But not bad. Not bad. Martell replied,
"I have that which I need, but beg of the city a favor. My friend Adam Stone is here. I desire to see him on urgent and personal lawful affairs."
The voice replied,
"Did you have an appointment with Adam Stone?"
"No."
"The city will find him. What is his number?"
"I have forgotten it."
"You have forgotten it? Is not Adam Stone a magnate of the instrumentality? Are you truly his friend?"
"Truly." Martell let a little annoyance creep into his voice. "Watcher, doubt me and call your subchief."
"No doubt implied. Why do you not know the number?
"This must go into the record," replied the voice.
"We were friends in childhood. He has crossed the..." Martell started to say the up and out, and remembered that the phrase was current only among scanners. "He has leapt from earth to earth and has just returned. I knew him well, and I seek him out now. I have word of his kith. May the instrumentality protect us."
"Heard and believed. Adam Stone will be searched."
At a risk, though a slight one, of having the sphere sound an alarm for non-man, Martell cut in on his scanner speaker within his jacket. He saw the trembling needle of light await his words, and he started to write on it with his blunt finger. "That won't work," he thought, and had a moment's panic until he found his comb, which had a sharp enough tooth to write. He wrote, "Emergency, none. Martell, scanner, calling, Parisiansky, scanner." The needle quivered, and the reply glowed and faded out. "Parisiansky scanner on duty, and DC calls taken by scanner relay." Martell cut off his speaker. Parisiansky was somewhere around. Could he have crossed the direct way, right over the city wall, setting off the alert and invoking official business when the petty officers overtook him in midair? Scarcely. That meant that a number of other scanners must have come in with Parisiansky, all of them pretending to be in search of a few of the tenuous pleasures which could be enjoyed by a Haberman, such as the sight of the news pictures or the viewing of beautiful women in the pleasure gallery. Parisiansky was around, but he could not have moved privately, because Scanner Central registered him on duty and recorded his movements city by city. The voice returned. Puzzlement was expressed in it.
"Adam Stone is found and awakened. He has asked pardon of the Honorable and says he knows of no Martell. Will you see Adam Stone in the morning? The city will bid you welcome."
Martell ran out of resources. It was hard enough mimicking a man without having to tell lies in the guise of one. Martell could only repeat,
"Tell him that I am Martell, the husband of Lucy."
"It will be done."
Again, the silence, and the hostile stares, and the sense that Parisiansky was somewhere near and getting nearer. Martell felt his heart beating faster. He stole a glimpse at his chest box and set his heart down a point. He felt calmer, even though he had not been able to scan with care. The voice this time was cheerful, as though an annoyance had been settled.
"Adam Stone consents to see you. Enter Chief Downport and welcome."
The little sphere dropped noiselessly to the ground, and the wire whispered away into the darkness. A bright arc of narrow light rose from the ground in front of Martell and swept through the city to one of the higher towers, apparently a hostel, which Martell had never entered. Martell plucked his air coat to his chest for ballast and stepped heel and toe on the beam and felt himself whistle through the air to an entrance window which sprang up before him as suddenly as a devouring mouth. A tower guard stood in the doorway.
"You are awaited, sir. Do you bear weapons, sir?"
"None," said Martell, grateful that he was relying on his own strength. The guard led him past the check screen. Martell noticed the quick flight of a warning across his screen as his instruments registered and identified him as a scanner, but the guard had not noticed. The guard stopped at a door.
"Adam Stone is armed. He is lawfully armed by authority of the instrumentality and by the liberty of this city. All those who enter are given fair warning."
Martell nodded an understanding of the man and went in. Adam Stone was a short man, stout and benign. His gray hair rose stiffly from a low forehead. His whole face was red and merry-looking. He looked like a jolly guide from the pleasure gallery, not like a man who had been at the edge of the up-and-out, fighting the great pain without Haberman protection. He stared at Martell. His look was puzzled, perhaps a little annoyed, but not hostile. Martell came to the point.
"You don't know me. I lied. My name is Martell, and I mean you no harm, but I lied. I beg the honorable gift of your hospitality.
Remain armed, and direct your weapon against me."
Stone smiled.
"I'm doing so."
And Martell noticed the small wire point in Stone's capable, plump hand.
"Good. Keep on guard against me. It will give you confidence in what I shall say. But do, I beg you, give us a screen of privacy. I want no casual lookers. This is a matter of life and death."
"First, whose life and death?"
Stone's face remained calm, his voice even.
"Yours and mine, and the world's."
"You are cryptic, but I agree."
Stone called through the doorway.
"Privacy, please."
There was a sudden hum, and all the little noises of the night quickly vanished from the air of the room. Said Adam Stone,
"Sir, who are you? What brings you here?"
"I am Scanner 34.
"You a scanner? I don't believe it."
For answer, Martell pulled his jacket open, showing his chest box. Stone looked up at him, amazed. Martell explained,
"I'm cranched." "Have you ever seen it before?"
"Not with men, not animals." "Amazing, but what do you want?"
"The truth. Do you fear me?"
"Not with this,"
said Stone, grasping the wire point.
"But I shall tell you the truth."
"Is it true that you conquered the great pain?"
Stone hesitated, seeking words for an answer.
"Quick, can you tell me how you've done it, so that I may believe you?"
"I have loaded ships with life."
"Life?"
"Life. I don't know what the great pain is, but I did find that in the experiments when I sent out masses of animals or plants, the life in the center of the mass lived longest. I built ships, small ones of course, and sent them out with rabbits, with monkeys."
"Those are beasts?"
"Yes, with small beasts, and the beasts came back unhurt. They came back because the walls of the ships are filled with life. I tried many kinds, and finally found a sort of life that lives in waters. Oysters, oyster beds. The outermost oysters died in the great pain. The inner ones lived. The passengers were unhurt."
"But they were beasts."
"Not only beasts. Myself."
"You?"
"I came through space alone. Through what you call the up and out. Alone, awake and sleeping. I'm unhurt. If you don't believe me, ask your brother Scanners. Come and see my ship in the morning. I'll be glad to see you then, along with your brother Scanners. I'm going to demonstrate before the chiefs of the instrumentality."
Martell repeated his question.
"You came here alone?"
Adam Stone grew testy.
"Yes, alone. Go back and check your scanner's register if you don't believe me. You never put me in a bottle to cross space."
Martell's face was radiant.
"I believe you now. It is true. No more scanners. No more Habermans. No more cranching."
Stone looked significantly toward the door. Martell did not take the hint.
"I must tell you that."
"Sir, tell me in the morning. Go enjoy your cranch. Isn't it supposed to be a pleasure? Medically, I know it well, but not in practice."
"It is pleasure. It's normality, for a while. But listen, the scanners have sworn to destroy you and your work."
"What?"
"They have met and have voted and sworn. You will make scanners unnecessary, they say. You will bring the ancient wars back to the world if scanning is lost and the scanners live in vain."
Adam Stone was nervous but kept his wits about him.
"You're a scanner. Are you going to kill me? Or try?"
"No, you fool. I have betrayed the confraternity. Call guards the moment I escape. Keep guards around you. I will try to intercept the killer."
Martell saw a blur in the window. Before Stone could turn, the wire point was whipped out of his hand. The blur solidified and took form as Parisiansky. Martell recognized what Parisiansky was doing. High speed. Without thinking of his cranch, he thrust his hand to his chest and set himself up to high speed, too. Waves of fire, like the great pain, but hotter, flooded over him. He fought to keep his face readable as he stepped in front of Parisiansky and gave the sign, "Top emergency." Parisiansky spoke, while the normally moving body of Stone stepped away from them as slowly as a drifting cloud.
"Get out of my way! I am on a mission!"
"I know it. I stop you here and now.
Stop, stop, stop! Stone is right!
Parisiansky's lips were barely readable in the haze of pain which flooded Martel. He thought,
God, God, God of the ancients, let me hold on. Let me live under overload just long enough.
Parisiansky was saying,
Get out of my way! By order of the confraternity, get out of my way!
And Parisiansky gave the sign, Help, I demand, in the name of my duty. Martel choked for breath in the syrup-like air. He tried one last time.
Parisiansky, friend, my friend, stop! Stop!
No scanner had ever murdered scanner before. Parisiansky made the sign. You are unfit for duty, and I will take over. Martel thought, for the first time in the world, as he reached over and twisted Parisiansky's brain box up to overload. Parisiansky's eyes glittered in terror and understanding. His body began to drift down toward the floor. Martel had just strength enough to reach his own chest box as he faded into Haberman or death, he knew not which. He felt his fingers turning on the control of speed, turning down. He tried to speak, to say,
Get a scanner. I need help. Get a scanner.
But the darkness rose about him, and the numb silence clasped him. Martel awakened to see the face of Lucy near his own. He opened his eyes wider and found that he was hearing the sound of her happy weeping, the sound of her chest as she caught the air back into her throat. He spoke weakly.
Still cranched? Alive?
Another face swam into the blur beside Lucy's. It was Adam Stone. His deep voice rang across the immensities of space before coming to Martel's hearing. Martel tried to read Stone's lips, but he could not make them out. He went back to listening to the voice.
Not cranched. Do you understand me? Not cranched.
Martel tried to say,
But I can hear. I can feel.
The others got his sense, if not his words. Adam Stone spoke again.
You've gone back through the Haberman. I put you back first. I didn't know how it would work in practice, but I had the theory all worked out. You don't think the instrumentality would waste the scanners, do you? You go back to normality. We're letting the Habermans die as fast as the ships come in. They don't need to live anymore. But we're restoring the scanners. You're the first. You understand me. You're the first. Take it easy now.
Adam Stone smiled. Dimly behind Stone, Martel thought that he saw the face of one of the chiefs of the instrumentality. That face, too, smiled at him, and then both faces disappeared upward and away. Martel tried to lift his head to scan himself. He could not. Lucy stared at him, calming herself, but with an expression of loving perplexity, she said,
My darling husband, you're back again to stay.
Still, Martel tried to see his box. Finally, he swept his hand across his chest with a clumsy motion, and there was nothing there. The instruments were gone. He was back to normality, but still alive. In the deep, weak peacefulness of his mind, another troubling thought took shape. He tried to write with his finger, the way that Lucy wanted him to, but he had neither pointed fingernail nor scanner's tablet. He had to use his voice. He summoned up his strength and whispered,
Scanners!
Yes, darling, what is it?
Scanners!
Scanners, oh yes, darling. They're all right. They had to arrest some of them for going into high speed and running away, but the instrumentality caught them all those on the ground, and they're happy now. Do you know, darling, some of them didn't want to be restored to normality, but Stone and the chiefs persuaded them.
She laughed.
Vomact!
Oh, he's fine, too. He's staying cranched until he can be restored. Do you know he has arranged for scanners to take new jobs? You're all deputy chiefs for space. Isn't that nice? But he got himself made chief for space. You're all going to be pilots, so that your fraternity and guild can go on. And Chang's getting changed back right now. You'll see him soon."
Her face turned sad. She looked at him earnestly and said,
"I might as well tell you now. You'll worry yourself otherwise. There's been one accident, only one. When you and your friend called on Adam Stone, your friend was so happy he forgot to scan and let himself die of overload."
"Called on Stone?"
"Well, yes, don't you remember? Your friend."
He still looked surprised, so she said,
"Parisiansky."
The end.
We hope that you've enjoyed this Uvula Audio presentation of Scanners Live in Vain by Cordwainer Smith. Your narrator has been James Campanella. The opening and closing themes were J.S. Bach's famous Toccata and Fugue in D minor. Please feel free to write us and tell us what you think at uvulaaudio@uvulaaudio.com. You can also become a Facebook fan of Uvula Audio. Just do a search for Uvula Audio on Facebook, or do it from the main Uvula Audio webpage. As usual, check out our Cafe Press website for t-shirts, etc. For other Uvula Audio titles, please go to our website at www.uvulaaudio.com. We are listed on iTunes, and you can subscribe and download our podcasts for free from there. If you like our podcasts, please feel free to tip us whatever amount you may like using the secure PayPal links at uvulaaudio.com. Uvula Audio will next be presenting the final book in P.G. Woodhouse's Bertie and Jeeves series, Aunts Are Not Gentlemen. This novel was among the last books that Woodhouse wrote in his life. You should expect the usual level of insanity, perhaps even a bit more, because it was the last hurrah. From all of us at Uvula Audio, we thank you.